it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Scott Fliegelman, there in Boulder Pickleball. I can hear the clock clocking in the background with our piped in. How you doing, buddy?
That's not piped in. That's the real thing.
It is. There's actual players on actual courts doing actual pickleball.
Thank God.
Last week's episode, Scott, we talked about the responsibilities and role of a right side player. And today we are flipping the script and we're going to do left side, which is, another side to the pickleball court.
I was thinking last week when we talked about it that we didn't necessarily specify whether you're supposed to play the right side the whole time or the left side or the characteristics that make a left side or right side player. It's just more so what to do when you're on the right side. And today I'm inclined to talk about what to do when you're on the left side. Partner dynamics being what they are, we're going to kind of leave it up to you. I know we've touched on it in the past. We can do a dedicated show on it as to whether or not you guys should have dedicated positions. But today, I'm pretty much ready to talk about what to do when you're on the left.
Before we dig in, of course, if you're looking for a carbon paddle, use the promo code 402P at checkout. And that is at carbonpickleball.com. And then, Scott, I thought, because I think it's funny, I jumped on court the other day and I took two games off. So I was playing for an hour, hour and a half, and then I took a couple games off. And then I was sort of re-warming up again. And I just said, man, everything hurts, which I believe is a statement that we can all utter if we're over the age of 50 playing pickleball a lot. So I'm going to make an everything hurts shirt to wear on the pickleball court. I haven't done it as of this recording, but by the time you hear this, it will be available at makeemhit.com. That's makeemhit.com. The everything hurts t-shirt should get a guffaw out of the people you play with on the courts.
That's the site where you could also score one of those same guy t-shirts, is it not?
Do you think I should make a same girl? Is it? I've never heard it uttered from the ladies. I've heard it uttered, because guys tend to bust a little more balls than the ladies do. They're very supportive. But I wonder if I should make a same girl shirt. Ladies, if you'd like a same girl shirt, send us an email and let me know and I'll make one. I'll make a cool, women's only, what is it, razorback tank that'll say same girl on it. Look at that. Just like that, Scott.
We'll see how they sell. Then we'll get our answer.
Also, guys, you may notice in your feed that some of the episodes will be replayed. And what I'm going to do is actually start replaying the show for the people that have just come on, let's say episode 30, and they didn't get that whole 1-30 experience where we break down how to play winning pickleball and how to do a great forehand and a great backhand and a great third and a great fourth and a great fifth. So I'm going to start replaying those episodes midweek just to give you guys something to listen to if you want a refresher. I'm sure many of you have heard those shows before, but feel free to jump on and listen again just to get the stuff burned into your brain. And if you're brand new to the channel, you'll have amazing new content to dig into. And I think you'll find it lovely and wonderful. So when I started playing pickleballs about 3.5 years ago, the role and responsibility of the left side player was maybe I don't want to say it was 50-50, but there was a lot more my side, your side thing happening. And then I think the dominance of the Johns brothers, Ben and Colin, and the way that they structured their game, where Colin was this guy that was, I don't know, 3 to 4 fifths of the court on the right-hand side, and Ben was really strong in the middle and then some. And then we saw that sort of bleed over into mixed quite a bit, that there's been a bit of a formula where you go, okay, this is the way that winning pickleball is played generally. And what I think I've found on the, I'll be sort of the rec court guy here, found that nowadays, that people are more compliant with that idea versus pushing back on it and doing sort of that stab backhand volley in the middle that can sometimes really disrupt the flow of a two-shot combo or something like that we talked about last week. How have you seen the game evolve over the last 3 or 4 years?
I agree with you, Michael. The Johns brothers are definitely to be credited for really popularizing a not 50-50 approach to playing ball. And they've both spoken about it eloquently. I kind of remember back to 2019, my first season playing pro tournaments, Tournament of Champions, watching Riley and Lindsey Newman really play the game in this fashion. Lindsey spent a lot of time in the Ernie position, which was designed to either get her an easy kill or get Riley the ball. And I think that was probably around the origin of it as much as anything. Certainly taken off of late, very, very popular on the Pro Tour in mixed doubles. And we're starting to see a little bit more of it in men's as well. In women's doubles, I think it's a little less prevalent and struggling a little bit to figure out why. And I'm fairly sure it has to do with the super strong two-handed backhands that we see from most of the top women. Those right-sided players, they really want to get in on the action with the two-y. And maybe one of the reasons why we're not seeing as strong a left-side dominant play on the women's game.
We are on record a lot, Scott, as saying if you're the left-side player, you need to be much more verbal than the right-side player. We like to think of that left-side player, again, we're assuming two right-handers on the court, things are shifted considerably if there's a righty and a lefty, or a lefty and a lefty, you can just mirror all this. But the idea that the left-side player kind of has a bit of the driver's seat in terms of the strategic positioning and taking of certain balls, and we want to have a much more verbal version of that person on the left-hand side. And I'm going to say, especially in rec play, where you don't have partners that you play with all the time, and you can just assume where the ball's going to be taken. A lot of times that team can have some trouble in the middle because they don't have those roles delineated within the team, which is why the verbal mine yours is so important.
I say to myself as a player and to my students all the time, when you find yourself on the left, pre-serve or pre-return, sweet, I get to be on the left side. I'm going to get 20, 30% more touches this rally if I am up to 50% more verbal and I claim those balls in the middle. Again, to your point, if it's open play and it's rec and these aren't dedicated left side, right side players, we're going to have to find a way to get that backhand of my right side player, not sticking it in the middle there. And a loud early mine call, me call, is a great way to get them to back off. If we're dedicated partners with left side, right side responsibilities, we may have to be less verbal. But boy, it's a good habit to get into starting now.
Well, as we did last week, what we'll do, Scott, is let's start at the non-volley zone with the responsibilities, and we'll sort of back our way out if we need to. But let's talk about the nuts and bolts of what makes a consistent left side player in terms of what shots we need to really have in our arsenal over and over and over again without making too many mistakes.
Well, being more consistent starts with what I like to call an all-day dink. And if you're on the left-hand side, you're going to need a very reliable all-day backhand cross-court dink. For most players, that's going to be a one-handed controlling underspin or moderate slice backhand. We need really crisp footwork on that, and you need to be able to put that ball cross court and relatively unattackable all day. These days, I would also like to see that combined with some sort of disguise and deception that we are afforded when we put a second hand on the paddle. Michael, I know you do this some of the time. You can roll a topspin dink cross court. You can also speed up. You can speed up directly ahead. You can go down the middle. You can pull it wide. I think it's a really important thing for a left-sided player to be able to add to their game if they don't already have it.
It's one of my favorite shots now. It's the two-handed dink roll, which is something we talked about a few episodes ago. Like James Ignatowicz has such a great one. It's such a beautiful, compact shot. It's so fun because you can really go with a lovely sharp angle if you want, or you can go right to the body of the person across from you and you can make that decision in a split second and they have a really hard time recognizing it. So it's a really fun shot to add to the arsenal. We've got an all-day slice, meaning you can get to that ball and you can literally just go and go and go and go. And I think a really good drill to do on that is to start with, let's say, 20 back and forth and then go to 50 and then go to 100. I think with one of my coaches, we got to about 200 and I said, my legs are going to fall off of my body. But being able to do 200 backhand dinks in a row is a pretty awesome thing. It's something that will make your training time well worth it if you can start building yourself up to that kind of consistency. One thing I'm seeing a lot, Scott, in tournaments, a lot more than I did a couple years ago, especially at the U.S. Open, were lobs. And I want to say it was Chris Cargis. I don't know everybody's name, but it was a split age pro match. And she was on the right hand side. And every time she would get that ball on the right, not every time, but a lot of times on the right hand side, she would just flip this lob over to the back left hand corner. And I mean, she did it almost every single rally and it was so disruptive to that other team. I think we're just going to see it a lot. How do you feel about that left side player chasing that ball down versus the one who the ball is going right over their head?
Well, definitely tip your hat to Chris Cargis, who's just a great all-court player. Sherry Korter also had an amazing tournament and was really successful with a lot of lobs from the right-hand side as a left-handed player to the back corner. As a left-side player myself, again, when I start the rally, I'm like, sweet, I get to get more touches. But oh yeah, reminder that I'm the primary player responsible for lobs at this point because they're all going to be on my right side. I do want to give my right-sided partner the chance to claim a lob over his or her head, but I am like crouched and ready to either sneak behind and get it out of the air, or if it goes over their head, I'm definitely the player on the diagonal who goes back for that ball on my forehand. I may also be in charge of one that gets over my head because for my partner, they do have a nice angle diagonally, but it will be their backhand. And that's usually a conversation I would have with my partner in advance. What do we want to do with the one that goes over my head as a left side player? And I'd say 7 out of 10 times, I take responsibility for that one as well.
One thing, Scott, that I've been doing a lot lately, and I think this is a really sound practice for the left side player, is when my partner returns serve and I'm free on the left-hand side, I will try to be as big as I can in the middle to try to get them to really drop a perfect ball, or I can attack it with my forehand. Or if they don't try to drop into this tiny little bucket I've given them by really going, you know, cross court to the left, sometimes they try to go behind me, but they're not used to doing that. It feels like a much lower percentage shot and you can force them into a mistake. So I really love the idea of playing like really big when you're on the left-hand side and it happens that your teammate returns that ball.
It's a pattern we've referenced somewhat lately on the show. A down the line return when you're the right side player, when you're on the even side, return that ball down the line. That gives your left-sided partner the chance to come over and get big with far less risk of getting beat to their left. I feel like one of my greatest strengths on the court is as a disruptor, and this is a great opportunity to disrupt their comfort and give them a tiny little window to drop that ball into. Frequently, it goes into the net. Sometimes you get the poach, but at least you're making them think quite a bit before they hit their third. It's one of those partner conversations that I ask students to have all the time before they head into an important match. Who are we returning to and why? And this would be part of the conversation is maybe when we're on the right side, it doesn't matter who's directly across from me, a return down the line from the right side so the left side player can get big and disrupt. That could be a bread and butter play for our team.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, as we ascend up the ladder, once we get to that 4-5 level and above, the gaps that we see on the court aren't always necessarily there. And very early on, Scott, I remember hearing you talk about if you ever got a very hard cross-court dink and you're playing left side and you're off court a little bit, you don't want your teammate to take that ball that's going to come back because you're pretending like there's space there. But what you really want is them to think there's space there. Then you pounce on that ball and hit a forehand. So you're really baiting them into this open space. And I think that's probably the lesson, that the space isn't there like we think it is, which is why we always say, if you can see their feet, hit their feet, because the space might not be there. We like to do a thing where if you shift a little bit to the left and you change your paddle grip, so now you're kind of in a slightly more forehand shield, a la the Hydra defense, assuming the ball is cross court from you and they try to speed it up, you're baiting them into that. You're making it look like there's a space there, but there ain't no space there. And you can collapse and pounce on that.
Yeah, we're making progress with the Hydra defense concept, myself personally, as well as the 100 or so students who've been working on it. And again, it's so much of a mindset. When I am dinking diagonally cross court with our backhands from the left side to the left side of player on the other side, the number one thing I want them to do, and I'm completely ready for it, is to try to speed up down the middle and or cross court. And I'm either physically or at least mentally sitting on forehand counter. That's what I want. And then they're very likely to dink cross court. And I've got plenty of time to make the adjustment for that. The concept that you mentioned, but just kind of takes that to a slightly higher level, that good for them, they pulled me off court a bit. I hit my backhand slice or 2E cross court. And for a brief moment, there's some space in the middle there. I do want my partner cognizant of their down the line option, the opponents, so that they're not leaving the line open to cover the middle for me because I'm on my way back. And again, the number one thing I want them to do is try to hit the ball into the space that ain't gonna be there.
And it's such a satisfying shot. Let's be honest. That is a really like, that wasn't there like you thought it was.
If one were prone to finger wag, that would be a good time to do it. Even when the ball isn't in your hands, you are moving your feet and causing problems for the defense. In this case, I want to create stress for the player directly across the net from me, which is our opponent's right side player, who, when the ball's on their paddle, they are very likely to dink cross court, forehand to forehand. I want to make that a stressful situation with my off-ball movement. Sometimes I move right to the middle to the tee just as they're about to hit, and frequently that will result in them dinking a foot or two wide. I want them to think that down the line is open so that they will pull the trigger on a ball to my left. They have to go over the high part of the net, which even though it's only 2 inches higher than the middle, I swear sometimes it's like 2 feet taller.
Foot, yeah.
Out there, because it's a really hard shot, especially if the dink is shallow. So I'm moving my feet. I've really got to keep in mind, what can I do off ball to be able to create distraction and annoyance, especially to the player directly in front of me? And this is where we need some off-court preparation if we're going to do this well, match after match. We need lateral explosiveness, bounding, plyometrics. We need resilience. We have to stay healthy with this type of movement on the court. Lunges, fore aft, lateral, diagonal, squats, weighted, unweighted, trail running. These are all great things to do to become a powerful and effective left side player creating disruption.
Yeah, I suppose the higher you get up the food chain, the more off-court training is necessary. And I know something that you struggle with because you're so busy with Boulder Pickleball. You guys don't know this, Scott. Scott's an Ironman triathlete, amongst other things. But you're a super fit dude, which is why you're so great being a pickleball senior pro and why you've been really an athlete your whole life. Do you find that you can squeeze in some sort of cross training when you're not obviously starting a new company like Boulder Pickleball, but let's say prior to this bit of chaos you've had over the last year, that you've been able to squeeze in some training in Boulder, and what kind of compact training would you do?
Generally, the answer is no, regrettably. And I'm fairly sure that all of my legacy fitness from my Ironman days has been exhausted. I have none of that left. And you know, a tip that I used to give athletes when I was coaching endurance sport is put a big scary goal on your calendar. It'll be remarkable how motivating that'll be to get out of bed and do the training. So for me, the big scary goal is the latest NPL season kicks off in 3 weeks in Chicago. I was named captain of the Denver Iconics, and I went ahead and I shared with my new teammates some of my own process goals that are designed to motivate me to be the best player and teammate that they can be. And I opened the floor up to my fellow teammates to share back for a level of accountability, their own process goals. And one of mine is I'm carrying 10 pounds more than I would like. I mean, I'm a fit, fast guy, but there's no getting around what it says on the scale. I'm 56 and a half years old, and it's hard to keep the weight off. So I am definitely proactively eating cleaner and portion control. And I'm doing 3 to 4 high intensity interval training sessions a week. I need a coach and playmates to motivate me. That's better for me than going to the gym and working out solo. And that's been motivational to have that big, scary goal. And as a left side player coming back to this, I really need to be fit and powerful and resilient.
Yeah, no one's ever going to mistake you for not being able to run around a pickleball court and be fast and agile. But you at your peak is very scary, I think, for the rest of people, especially when you're playing singles events, because that's a whole thing.
Well, hopefully I can get back to my peak in the next month or two.
So, Scott, I was watching the Johns brothers at the Red Rock Open prior to them getting bounced, but they had a match where they won very convincingly. I want to say it was like 0-1 or something like that. Ben's one-handed roll from shoelaces was so lethal in this match. He could seemingly speed up anytime he wanted, and he just kept hitting everybody in the middle of the chest. It was just one of those things you go, man, I don't know a lot of people that have that particular shot. So his ability to instigate with that one-handed backhand and really rip it with that, I don't know, is it kind of a ping pong shot? I don't even know what to call that thing.
It is for him.
It is so good. And I do think that whether it's a one-y or a two-y, that's something that needs to be on our list of responsibilities as a left side player.
Yeah, and while we're hitting the gym, I think we really need to make sure that we are doing what it takes to be really effective and balanced in a squat. So we've got to be able to just to get to a ball that is not all that high off the ground on balance, so that we may choose to instigate if the context of the rally in the context of the game calls for such a shot. And by the way, ours does not need to be nearly as pretty as Ben's.
Well, good.
And it's not going to be. And listeners, it's probably not going to be either. But we do need the comfort to poke the ball out of the air toward the chicken wing of the player directly in front of us, or at least that's the starting play, with whatever technique you've got. And remember that the instigator really is no faster than 20% swifter than they are expecting, because it's the first of a two-shot combo. If it hits him in the chest and you win the rally, that's a bonus. But we're really just looking to coax the pop-up out of these guys. And as a left-sided player, I have found myself getting too enamored and impatient when I get the first ball I can get out of the air. There are occasions where I will go ahead and instigate, and I probably need to be a little bit more patient. Remember, plan A is to beat them with intentional and aggressive dinking. If we can get the pop-up from that, then I don't need the risk of instigating. It's only when the intentional dinking isn't causing the pop-ups that we may need to get more and more aggressive. And as we say, lower the X, the ball gets closer and closer to the ground where I may need to instigate on those balls.
And this is another opportunity for us to work on our lower leg fitness and do some squats, whether they're air squats, wall squats, squat squats, but really try to get the quads and calves strong and the buns and be able to be very comfortable getting down, because where it's happening, you know, below your knees for a lot of these balls. And so we've got to use the big muscles and not small for a lot of these shots. One of my favorite parts is the shake and bake. So we can take what we talked about earlier today, where our teammate returns down the line. The other team is struggling to find a good third because we are a large presence in the middle. If it happens that our teammate has a great drive, well, let them rip that ball right at the people that are at the net. So we're the servers, we're on the third, we're ripping at the people at the net. Presumably somebody is not as good at handling those volleys as the other, and your partner can collapse on that rebound from the drive, from the third shot drive, and put it away. And that is, as we call it, the shake and bake.
I practiced yesterday with a couple of new players, and when I was on the left, I'm always clearly proactively visualizing the opportunity for a shake and bake. As such, on the left side. I don't take as many thirds in the middle as some of these partners were expecting me to take. I would rather that my right side player, and Eva Welcher did an incredible job with this, Scott Moore as well last summer, that if they can drop or drive from the right side, it gives me the chance to disrupt, to get into the midcourt and look for the shake and bake. Is it a traditional shake and bake off of a drive? Perhaps. Perhaps the drop itself gives me a chance to come across. They're trying to keep my right-sided partner back, and it's only two steps away from me to my forehand. When I'm on the right side, I'm a little less aggressive. My backhand, be it one hand or two, is not as effective. I don't move to my left as well, but boy, I move to my right well. And as such, I don't take as many thirds on the left as some people do. And yeah, let's give that some consideration.
Would you, I'm asking you this as a player to a coach, if you're kind of looking for that ball, we've talked a lot about aligning left on serve. And then for that return, if it happens to be down the middle, it's sort of body on me, the server, if I'm serving from the right-hand side. Would you then consider me stepping back a couple of feet to take that forehand and you sort of scooching back out of the way? Or would you rather me move out of the way and you get that forehand in the middle?
That's a really good question, and thanks for clarifying for the listeners. My preference would be that you take that with a backhand. If you're uncomfortable with that, we're going to need to have that conversation so that you don't feel uncomfortable hitting that third. I'll come over and I'll take it with my forehand. That may not be our play. I have many partners who have a nice buttery slice drop or perhaps a drive with the two hands. You have a nice twoey. That may be a shot that if you and I are playing together, I'd be like, well, what do you think about cranking up some twoeys from the baseline and right, then letting me disrupt in the midcourt? But if you're uncomfortable with that, then no, I don't think I want you to slide left into my side to take that forehand. I'll just come over and take that forehand and we'll go from there.
And explain something I've actually never heard on the court before, but you are one for nomenclature. Talk to me about the shake and broil.
Trademark pending, I'm not sure. But this is a similar play. It happens a lot in mixed that sometimes proactively, I might encourage my partner who's in transition, perhaps in a little bit of a battle straight ahead, to not immediately close the gap and make it to the non-volley zone. Because that's another opportunity for me as the left side player to identify that they're trying not to hit the ball in my direction. They're trying to keep my partner back. And I've had many an enjoyable excursion to the right to be able to pick that ball off. I don't know if it's directly related to shake and bake, but let's just call it shake and broil for now.
So what you're saying then, if I can clarify, that you're intentionally telling them slow down a little bit because I know that they're going to try to hit you in the feet from the transition zone, which means that 3 or 4 feet in front of that, if I have enough space, I can poach that ball and put it right back at them. Is that what you're
saying?
That's
the fact, Jack. Yes. Yes. There are times, left side players, where we are a few steps ahead of our right sided partner and they're kind of stuck in transition dealing with balls at their feet. That's an opportunity early on in that exchange to slide right, cut that ball off, but we really need to be looking for it. And I have had conversations with my right sided partners. Take your time coming through there. I'm going to pick one of those off. And that can be a very effective play.
Yeah, I love that. We're starting to get into some very advanced X's and O's with this. And that's what I love about partnerships. When you watch someone on a court, and I think we all see this playing rec, that you can just be way out of sync with a brand new player. But then when you settle in with somebody, dude, I feel like it's like 70% of your ability to win a game is how well you sync and are able to pass different shots off to each other in a very linear, cohesive fashion without the angst and you, me, you, and oh man, oh, that was in the middle. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things you see people that are really, really comfortable with each other. I mean, obviously we get back to the Johns again. They know what their roles are so specifically that you don't see a lot of balls going down the middle where both of them clack a paddle.
There's a lot that can be learned from watching these guys, but also, just because you don't see them loudly calling mine and yours doesn't mean that's not something we should be doing, especially on the rec courts and the open play. And as you're building your partnership relationship, we need to be more verbal.
So as we said at the beginning, communication is the key. We would love for you to take all of this stuff and turn into a fantastic left side player combined with last week's episode to learn how to be a fantastic right side player. If you are a tournament team and you tend to stay one side or the other, Make sure you share these shows with each other and make sure that you are on the same page on the court. Go and get the Everything Hurts t-shirt from makeemhit.com. Go buy a carbon pedal at carbonpickleball.com. Scott, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Michael. Good times.
We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.